Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va? This is Sybil Brunchen. Mummy, she's on the air live. I'm sorry our recording went a little haywire there. It's the technical difficulties, even in the 21st century, even as we're ending this second decade or whatever it is, maybe we're entering the third, whatever it is, of this new millennium and this new century, we still are. Basically, we're doing this show with two coffee cans and a string, and we try to keep the string as taut as we can so that we don't have technical difficulties. Mummy has been busy. We are broadcasting to you live right now, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 7 Central or your corresponding time zone. Mummy is not in the Cafe Berlin itself, high atop the Chrysler Building, in the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin. My producer, Gwendolyn, is there. Gwendolyn Holdenberry, my wonderful producer, is back in the studio. Mummy is actually on a remote. Can you imagine? I'm on a remote. I'm on a very long string with a very big coffee can, and I'm all the way in Minneapolis, which is the city of Minneapolis. Polis is city and are people, and Minnie is I don't know what. Anyway, it's a nice city. I'm here again on travels, and they've just begun to get some spring here. Believe it or not, all of you have had your snow melt, but poor Minneapolis, I mean, they are the hardiest people in the world. They literally got rid of their snow, I think, about 4 days ago, finally. We are broadcasting to you live, and I want to remind you that our sponsor, as always, is DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's the fragrant memories of our ancestors, Daughters of Isis, I-S-I-S.com. That's all one word. Go to your laptop and enter that and look up their website. They've got wonderful products there, all sorts of incredible products for the senses to expand not only your sensuality and your sexuality, but your philosophical reality and your intellectual reality. I think fragrant memories of our ancestors could do so much for us, especially today. Gwendolyn, are you on the air right now?
I am. I'm right here with you.
Gwendolyn, first of all, I'm going to just I want to remind everybody that our phone number, we are live, so people can call in from anywhere. Believe it or not, people could call in from Madagascar right now. Wouldn't that be exciting? Of course, it's like 4 in the morning there, but still. My number here is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. We will take phone calls tonight and chat with you. We have a new policy, though. We can't have people monopolize all the time. We have some people get on who are very long-winded, and sometimes we have phone calls that go on for 15 or 20 minutes, and that's Mummy's fault. And Gwendolyn has scolded me and spanked me thoroughly to keep that from happening, so I'm going to watch the time tonight. But Gwendolyn, before we get any phone calls, I just want to ask, it's spring. Spring is really, truly here. Is there a fragrance that we should be watching for in DaughtersOfIsis.com? What's your recommendation for this week?
Well, since it's spring and spring is all about flowers blooming, we've developed some new lines of little, small, personal, aromatic roll-ons. And I used florals to do all of the complete 8 seasons of the wheel of the year, and guided by the Earth Mother with the solstices and equinoxes and the cross quarter days, and they're all based in different florals. So I would just, the whole set I would get, because they give you so much to choose from and so much relief. And as I said, they're little personal floral aromatic moments, and
wonderful. That's great.
We can all use these days a moment to
ourselves. Can we ever? Oh my golly! Yeah, absolutely. One of my viewers wrote into me and said, has Gwendolyn ever considered doing a fragrance of the month club like the fruit of the month club? Have you ever thought about doing a fragrance of the month club in which each month is an inspiration for a fragrance? Would that be an interesting idea? And then someone could actually buy a membership to Daughters of Isis and get a fragrance, a wonderful bottle of fragrance sent to them every month. Would that be interesting? I wonder.
Well, actually, we've been trying to work that out because we represent so many different cultures. What we thought we would do is plan it around the significant holidays and cultural days of a month and put a box together. So, because a lot of people are doing them, we thought we'd do them too. And it's a box every month. So you wouldn't be just getting one scent. You would be getting several, and in mist and in soap and in roll-on and in a little oil to work with also, and incense.
I love that. I love that idea. Well, we will explore that more. I have brought a bottle of Kaifi with me. I wasn't sure what, the airports have become so impossible and they're so rude sometimes, not because they have to be, but because they have to worry about, terrorism and everything. So I've been bringing small bottles of the fragrances. In this particular trip to Minneapolis, I brought Kaifi. I'm not sure it was the right fragrance for this far north. We're so close to the Arctic Circle that perhaps I should have brought a more tropical thing. But I'll have to get your advice on that because I want to try and coordinate my fragrances with my geographical locations or at least my time zones. I mean, perhaps I should consult with you about longitude and latitude. Maybe we need to reduce it to math and we simply go on a globe and we do the math of the minutes and seconds and everything. And then we know exactly what mummy should pack with her so that I'm fragranced correctly per my location. But we'll figure that out. I want to remind everyone, our phone number is 323-784-9639. We are nearing our first anniversary of doing Come Now, Don't Sulk. And I want to just acknowledge that at the top of the show by saying thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, I'm getting emotional. To my wonderful muse and my sponsor and my producer, Gwendolyn, thank you for this adventure. It has been a challenging year to all of us. Externally, with politics and with the world and the climate, and then personally.
Look at the brightness in all of this. I mean, since November of 16, we've been in mourning, and yet there's this little. What did you say against the darkness?
One thing we were just joking about, Gwendolyn and I were just joking right before we came on the air, and one of my favorite, I think all books are valuable, including the Bible. It has wonderful things in it. And one of the quotes, I believe, is, I can't remember what book it's from, but it's better to light one little candle than to curse the darkness. And there are so many people in the world who will say, oh, things are terrible. Things are awful. Things are, why bother? Why bother? I can't do anything. We can't do anything. Look at what is happening. Look what's wrong. Look what can't be fixed. But it is better, truly better, to light one little candle, if that's all you can do, to light one little candle, than to curse the darkness, to sit there in your poop, in the pigsty of the world, and sit there splashing the turds around and not saying, you know what, I'm going to get up on my feet, and with my teaspoon, I'm going to begin scooping out this pigsty. It's like picking up litter. Can you clean the entire world? No. But you can bend over and pick up that candy wrapper on that particular part of the sidewalk. Everyone can do one little thing. And if we all lit one little candle, the world indeed would be light, filled with light. And it's better to do that than just to sit and mope and mope and mope and fuss and complain and do nothing. And that's why I, like Al Smith, am a happy warrior. Believe me, there are days and weeks and months where I go into angst. And I've been on the air with you people at home. And I have been talking with Gwendolyn over this last year. I have been in the depths of darkness many times. But I get up. I try to get up. I try to brush off my knees. I brush myself off. And I try to at least move forward. That's why I say those stupid old needlepoint things to you folks from my grandmother. Inch by inch, life's a cinch. Yard by yard, life is hard. Some days you're only going to be able to move forward 1 inch, but that 1 inch is at least movement, and it's 1 inch forward. It's better than just sitting on the ground and boohooing about it. Do something. Figure out something. Reach out to someone and shake their hand. Light one little candle. Pat a dog on the head. Smile at a baby. Cuddle a kitty. You know, do something.
Cheer for the good guys. Cheer for the good guys. Like, let's all give a great big round of applause to the Southern District of New York. Let's give them a cheer.
Yeah, there you go.
Because
yeah,
at least
there's all sorts of things happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's things happening out there. Yeah. And yes, today is the 82nd anniversary of the Hindenburg in Lakehurst, New Jersey. And as I opened the show today, I said, you know, the ad today was a picture of the Hindenburg, and it said, geez,
right.
Just when you think everything is going smoothly, or when you think things couldn't be any worse, whatever. But you know what? Yes, there's disasters all around us. We have a president, a psychopath, who is saying that he deserves two more years. He deserves two more years in office, not in re-election terms. He should just have his term of office extended two more years because, quote, the first 2 years were stolen from him. S-T-O-L-L-E-N. Tell me that this man does not deserve to be killed with a shovel. You know something, in a civilized society, someone would barge into the Oval Office with a shovel and bring it down on his head again and again and again. It's ridiculous. Two more years because my first 2 years were Stalin from. I can't live half-hearted. I just want you to know, I'm in my hotel room. I am rolling around on the floor laughing, and I just banged my head. My poor William Holden. I'm bleeding. I just banged my head. Sybil Brunson, sadly, Sybil Brunson, today in the news, Sybil Brunson died like William Holden did. She banged her head on a coffee table when her body was found. She had the biggest smile on her face, and neighbors complained that she had been laughing too loudly about Donald Trump's 2 years were stolen from him. Folks, do you understand that Hollywood pays millions of dollars to writers to write stuff that funny? Hollywood can't pay people millions to write things that absurd. And of course, the board of directors of the film industry, you know, would say, well, that's so far fetched. No president would ever say that. We can't make a movie like that. Do you realize that we're watching Game of Thrones right now? And if someone was smart, if Gwendolyn and I had any money at all, we would buy the rights to the 4 years of Donald, because he's going to last. We know that. We would buy the 4 years of Donald Trump and make it into a 10-year series of shrieking comedy. And all we'd have to do is transcript it. We wouldn't have to hire a writer at all. We would just transcript the whole thing. It would be Game of Thrown Up. Is what it would be. And, you know, it would be Game of Throw Up. And it would be the 4 years of Donald Trump's reign over this, you know, crumbling society. And the characters, oh my God, we'd have as many leading characters as Game of Thrones. Every week you'd have to tune in to see who was eliminated because he's fired 200 people. You know, it's like, oh my God, it would definitely be like a Game of Thrones. It's hysterical what we've lived.
Meryl Streep is Kelly. I don't forget what she said after the election, and then we lost Carrie Fisher, and she received the Life Achievement Award at the Golden Globes. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
She gave a speech that was just absolutely killer. It was Meryl. But to have her give her the script and say, can you play Kellyanne Conway? I think that's one that Meryl might raise her eyebrow.
You know, I've got to say, folks, it's very funny because being a comedian, a writer and a comedian, it sometimes people will get on the air and or on my website or whatever, and they will scold me. They'll say, "Mummy, it's not polite to make humor out of the Titanic or the Hindenburg or, you know, Archduke Ferdinand being assassinated or whatever." And I've said this many times. Humor and its pertinence and its acceptability has a lot to do with distance and time. We cannot joke about the World Trade Center 15 minutes after it happens. Of course, you can't joke about events that are fresh. But as events recede from us, the way the human cortex processes tragedy and processes a way of surviving the heartbreak of tragedy, whether it's personal or whether it's national, is humor. We seem to instinctively find ways to look at something, hold it in our hands, and then one day we're no longer crying. We look at it and we turn it slightly to the left and tip it, and we can chuckle. And if you don't believe me, the humor, if you think about it, all humor is based on tragedy, on loss, on rejection, on it's tragedy. Even the basest humor of all, slapstick. Slapstick is universal. You don't need language for slapstick. That's why silent films were universal. They went everywhere. Charlie Chaplin was the most famous human being on the planet during his life when he was starting out. People knew about him in Africa. People knew about him in Borneo. People knew about him everywhere because silent films required no language. Even the little cards with the storyline, those weren't necessary. And people understood slapstick. And slapstick, the basest of all comedies, is based on a banana peel. Now, to be honest, if somebody that you knew, your mom or your elderly grandmother, was walking down the sidewalk, slipped up in the air, levitated 4 feet in the air, and landed flat on her back, she would break her hip or her elbow or maybe her skull. She would die. But slapstick is about seeing Margaret Dumont or some society dame or some elderly man who's a penny-pinching miser slip on a banana peel and fly up in the air and crash down and bring a cart of pies down on himself. And we laugh. We shouldn't be laughing at that. That's not funny, but it is. That's the thing. Satire is based on mocking somebody, mocking them mercilessly. We shouldn't be doing that, but we do. Okay? So humor is, you know, a function of distance from the event and context. What is the context? So apropos of that, today we have the anniversary of the Hindenburg, and people have made movies about the tragedy of the Hindenburg and the controversy about whether it was sabotage or whether it was an accident. And they've also done comic sketches in which the end of the sketch is that all the characters in the sketch, unbeknownst to the audience at home, were on the Hindenburg. So everything nothing makes any difference anyway, because the quarrels and everything are all going to end up in an explosion. It's so interesting how we need to chuckle in the face of our own Hindenburg. And if you don't think this 2 years has been a Hindenburg that is in slow motion, this is not a disaster that took 3 minutes to happen. This has been 2 years of a slow motion, gradually exploding Zeppelin that goes on and on and on. 2 more years he wants because his first two were stolen from him. People are now going to prison. Michael Cohen is going to, Otisville in New York? Yeah. Did you see the aerial shots, the drone shots of Otisville prison? It's a country club. They have tennis courts and shuffleboard courts. And it's like, oh, for heaven's sakes. No wonder he's so comfortable going. It's going. His laundry will be done every day. He's going to a white-collar prison, as did Bernie Madoff, Bernie Madoff went to a white-collar prison, yes, for life, but he's going to be eating better than some of his victims, and certainly in a cleaner environment. If you can't find it to laugh at the horror of that, of white-collar prisons, which are for people who have done shocking things, borderline treasonous things, and this is how we punish them. 3 years, maybe. The operative word in that sentence is maybe. Michael Cohen may be let out in 2 years. He may have a shortened – he didn't do it. He didn't bring down enough with him. He didn't bring down enough people. But he's gone and he's winning Miss Congeniality as far as the accused goes. He's definitely the most shiny and virtuous of all of them as far as what he's cooperated about. I mean, Barr should be picked up with a pitchfork and thrown into a bonfire. But no. We're not doing that. The penalties for what these people are doing are nothing. And we are just – so you have to laugh. You eventually have to laugh through your tears because what are you going to do? Blow your own brains out? You know, that doesn't accomplish anything. So Gwendolyn and I are each lighting our little candles, and we encourage you to do the same thing. That's enough of politics tonight. I could go on about, you know, what socialism means to Americans. They're too stupid to know that socialism has been going on for years, for decades in this country, supporting the rich. But nobody grasps that because all they can see is a red star on Lenin's face, you know, with a sickle and hammer behind him. And that's what socialism means to Americans. But socialism, folks, let's call a spade a spade. Socialism is only good in America when it's supporting the rich. It's not okay to be helping people with terminal illnesses or people who've lost their jobs. But if you're rich, you get underwritten. And by the way, if I have any Nazi Republicans out there listening to me, if you don't believe me, just look at the list of mega corporations that paid no taxes this year. No taxes. My taxes were worse this year thanks to that orange bag of monkey pudding that's sitting in the White House. My taxes are worse this year. Worse. And the mega corporations paid nothing. Companies worth billions with golden parachute losers sitting on the board of directors. They paid nothing. You tell me about socialism, pal. I'll tell you right there. We could talk about fetal heartbeat, the new fetal heartbeat bill, which is, you know, going through all these states that want to repeal Roe versus Wade. By the way, if you're a woman listening to me right now and you're a strumpet or whatever you are, if you think that's okay, if you think it's okay for Roe versus Wade to be repealed, if you think that white men belong inside your vagina, go have your pussy petted by your president, and then do me a favor, blow your brains out. Okay, bye-bye, you're done. What is it? The UN just announced that 1 million of the estimated 8 million plant and animal species on the earth are at dire risk of extinction. 1/8 of all the plants and animals on this planet are in immediate danger of being extinct within 2 decades. And you, is that bad enough? Oh, and by the way, I know some of you don't care about bees or animals or plants or anything. No, their existence keeps our existence going. So even if you don't care about the intrinsic value of the life of a kitten or an aardvark or a rose, if you don't care that they are alive and deserve to live as well as us, they are living. Their living allows us to live. Case in point, some idiots in Texas, where else, burned beehives into a beehive farm and burned what is estimated to over 500,000 bees to death.
Oh, yeah.
As a prank. You don't think I would stuff them with nails and throw them into a bonfire? Throw them into a bonfire. That's what should be done. Find whoever did it. I don't even care if they're 11-year-olds. Find them, drag them out in front of their parents, stuff them full of nails, as Eliza Doolittle said about Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady. You ought to be stuffed with nails, you ought. Stuff them with nails and throw them into a bonfire in front of the entire village, by the way, as a lesson about eco-terrorism. You do eco-terrorism in this world, that's equivalent to that's to me, that's treason. If you're destroying the environment, you are a treasonous being on this planet. You deserve the same punishment as a traitor would do for political treason. The heave-ho. Uh-oh, Gwendolyn's coughing. Are you okay?
I swallowed wrong. I'm so sorry. I thought I covered my speaker.
That's all right. We need to get some distilled water over there. Okay, our phones are 323-784-9639. I want to invite you to call in and let's talk about, now that's enough of the politics. Let's talk about what we are doing to invite spring in. I know that a lot of us are flooded right now, flying over the Mississippi River to go from Memphis all the way up to Minneapolis, which is what I just did this week. I couldn't get over the view of the Mississippi River at full flood stage in lots of places. I know that Iowa is having serious flood problems, and people are hoping that this will not be a flood season like 1993 was, when the entire Midwest and prairie states were absolutely inundated with water, water, water everywhere. It was a catastrophe, the dead opposite of a drought. Anyway, so I hope that where you're living, you're not dealing with that, and that you're having the better sides of spring weather, despite all this tornado stuff that's happening. I will address, oh, I just got a private message here. Mummy, please tell us about the garden out on Fire Island. When Mummy gets too angry, you all say, I swear, you all, you don't call me, but you call each other, and you start calling each other. Toledo calls, you know, Akron, and Akron calls, you know, Warm Springs or something. They say, oh, God, Mummy's going off on a tangent about bees and stuffing with nails and bonfires and everything. Let's change the subject.
Mummy, you actually do have a call.
Oh, good. I'll take it.
Okay. 845 area code. Your mic is open.
Hello.
Hi there. Lauren.
Who is it?
It's Lauren.
Hi. How
Hi.
Are you?
Fine. I thought you needed company.
Yes, my viewership is down to 3 people now, and 2 of them are staff members. So it's very important that you called in. It's Gwendolyn and Mr. Abernathy, the janitor, and now you make 3.
My
ratings are climbing.
Too. And Lydia's probably listening, too.
How are you doing?
Fine. I almost forgot you were on, and I suddenly realized, oh, my God, I'm missing you. So I ran to the phone, I ran to the computer and then the phone. But I was listening to what you were saying about the, all of it.
<It's> just, Mummy covers
so
too many subjects, and then her nice audience gets confused.
I'm sorry.
What was it that caught your ear? Was it the bees in Texas?
First of all, the plants and animals that are becoming extinct, and then let's talk about flooding, and let's talk about the bees, any of those things, and that idiot that I won't even, he who must not be named, and
yes.
I just read, like, a minute before I phoned you, that Mnuchin won't give out the taxes, his taxes.
Isn't that astounding?
Yeah,
I find that just astounding, yeah. The defiance is what I can't get over. Gwendolyn and I were talking earlier this evening, too, about the old I, Claudius series on PBS, which was produced back in the 70s, and it was the BBC. You know, the BBC put that together on Masterpiece Theatre. They did it as Masterpiece Theatre from the British Broadcasting Company, and we got it here. And it was a surmised reality about the history from Augustus Caesar up through Nero. And those emperors, the fact that Rome supposedly went from a republic to an empire. And it was this Robert Graves guessed at what possibly could have happened given the history that was so dramatic. I wonder if 1,000 or 2,000 years from now, people, if we're still around, if humans even exist, will people look back at this period of history and be absolutely stunned at what happened and how it happened? I think that starting with the Kennedys, with John Kennedy and his assassination, the Vietnam War, and all of that on up to today, would be, people wouldn't believe it was real. People would not believe it's real. And the fact that we have people like Mnuchin and Barr, all of them, they're defiant in the face of being told, no, you've got to give the emperor's taxes to the Senate. You've got to submit the emperor's taxes. We have a right to look at this. And people simply say, no, I won't. In a civilized society, we would kick in the door, we would drag him out, and we would disembowel him, or we would behead him. I mean, I think we should apply Game of Thrones reality to our politics. We should pour molten gold down the treasurer's mouth. We should do things that are appalling because that seems to be the only thing left. They don't respond. They're in $6,000 suits. They're in, you know, Kellyanne Conway is wearing, you know, St. John luncheon suits that are worth $5,000-$6,000. She's too ugly to live, let alone to dress like that. We should drag her out the way the French Revolution, and we should drag her to a street corner shrieking, strip her naked, and behead her in front of Huckabee and say, now, you have 40 seconds to tell us the truth or we're going to tear your head off. What will it be? It's outrageous that we deal with this. We deal with this all the time.
I don't even think what the truth is anymore. I think there's so much in denial. They create this, they fabricate all this stuff, and then they go out and they say it. And
the nerve that they have to—they are so. There's so much hubris, which is the old Greek word for overweening pride. It's like. That Mitch McConnell and that wife of his would have wandered into a diner, 8 months ago, and think that a bunch of diner patrons would be okay with them sitting at the next table. The nerve. It's like, how could you possibly wander around where working people are and assume that they would always be supporting you, that they will always believe in Ronald Reagan's idiot trickle-down theory, that this is something you can continue forever? It's a wonder that they didn't they not only insulted them, but it's a wonder they didn't dip them in a French fryer. Mitch McConnell should have been lowered face first into a French fryer in that diner. He's trying to screw up everyone's medical care. He's trying to screw up everyone's Social Security and Medicaid. And then he's actually been quoted as saying that if anyone but Donald Trump is elected, he will block every piece of legislation that is brought out by anyone other than Donald Trump.
But they did that with Obama.
That's
they
right.
They blocked everything.
And shame on you and me and Gwendolyn. We let them do it. We let them do it. We should have gone to our Thanksgiving Day tables and killed every Republican in our own families. We should have served the turkey and then say, oh, before we bring the stuffing around, who's still for Donald Trump? Oh, Aunt Maisie? Okay, where's the carving knife? Aunt Maisie, come here.
I don't,
we let them do it.
I don't know if they don't see what's going on, or if they just see what's good for themselves, which is really what I think the truth is. I think that people basically look at not all people, but too many people, just are concerned on how it affects them. And they really don't care about anybody else.
But, darling, I agree with you except for one thing. I know Gwendolyn agrees. The people who have been rubber stamped, these blue collar, these working class people who are still standing behind Donald Trump in those videos of him at rallies, the level of stupidity now it's been 2 years where you see all these news reports of like people living in trailer parks going, I thought it was going to work out, but my daughter has leukemia and we have no insurance anymore. Well, you shouldn't have voted for your local Nazi, dear. You shouldn't have voted for Donald Trump. And now, you know, they're not sending the food truck around anymore. My husband's been out of work at the mine for 3 months now. Well, as long as Ivana Trump is still shopping on Fifth Avenue, dear, I don't know what you're complaining about. But the bottom line is they're starting to realize slowly that this was not okay. That they were Donald Trump was never a friend of the working man any more than George Bush was. He talked like a hillbilly, but he was an aristocratic family from Connecticut. He just had learned to be Texan, but he wasn't interested in having a brew with all of those three-toothed hillbillies that voted for him. He wouldn't have been caught dead with them. And Donald Trump is even farther into the neo-fascist sensibility. He is not even remotely concerned with working people. Look how he treats his own working people in his hotels and all his scams. And yet we still have a population. What is it, 40% still believe that he's going to do them some good? Or that Wall Street cares for them?
Oh, yeah, because they don't want to identify with people who are poor. They don't want to identify.
Yes,
they'd rather identify
so right.
with the fantasy of, you know, it's like when kids study the Middle Ages. Everybody thinks they're going to be kings and queens. Nobody thinks they're going to be they would be a peasant.
Right, right. People watch Game of Thrones and say, yeah, but I'll end up being the I'm going to end up being the mother of dragons. And that's most of the men that watch. You know, it's like ridiculous. You're so right. You're so right. You know, there's a line in the musical 1776. The musical 1776 was written about, of course, the signing of the Declaration of Independence. There's John Adams. There's John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And there's a character named John Dickinson, who is an aristocrat from Pennsylvania. And he and Benjamin Franklin are rivals and are political adversaries. Franklin is pro-revolution. He's very left-wing. You know, he's very much for insurrection. And John Dickinson is a man of property. And he is always saying, well, let's try and work out a routine, a situation with King George and the British. We shouldn't separate from the greatest empire in the world. It'll be dangerous. And besides which, who wouldn't want to pay extra taxes to be part of the British Empire? And at one point, they're bickering back and forth, and there's a brilliant scene between Benjamin Franklin and John Dickinson. And Benjamin Franklin says, you know something, John, and they're friends, but they're enemies, they're frenemies. He says, you know, John, you keep thinking that, you know, all these people, these working class people, the farmers and, you know, all these people are going to be your pal. You're not interested in them. You're rich. You don't give a damn about them. You're not concerned at all. You just want to keep your money and your property safe. And John Dickinson laughs at Benjamin Franklin. He looks down his nose at him, and he laughs and says, oh, Mr. Franklin, don't you understand the American public? Don't you understand? Most people would rather protect what little they have and hope that someday it'll all work out and they'll become rich than take the chances of change and revolution. They're much more concerned in protecting their sad, sad little, you know, pocket change and hoping that will grow and that they'll become rich, and rather than take any chances. And that's the American character. And I'll tell you something, if that had been the American character in 1776, we wouldn't be Americans. We would be British right now. It did take a core of people and a bunch of people who said, Judas Priest, I got $10. You know what? I'm in the game. Here, I'm going to toss the dice. And they threw their $10 down. But today, we are too based on trying to be Kardashians. As you said, we're all looking at Middle Ages and we're all thinking, well, I would be a queen if I was back then. I'd be a king. It's like, and we all want to be the Kardashians. We all want to be the real housewives from Butt Poke, Idaho. We all are trying to be on Andy Cohen's Look What Happens Tonight or whatever it is. And that's the truth. There isn't a spine in this country that you can count on. The revolutionaries in this country, the people are, a lot of them are brown. A lot of them are not white, waspy, you know, aged white men. There's almost no white men in this country who are revolutionaries. And the few that you can find are Buttigieg. Yeah, he's gay. So yeah, he's a member of a minority. But for the most part, they are safe and they're protecting. You got to go find a black woman with some spunk to find someone who's willing to throw in her $10 and shake the dice and say, you know what, let's try a new way. You know, Elizabeth Warren promoting socialism, you know, and she's even using the word, and it's like, it's a dangerous word to use. It doesn't sell any more than the word impeachment does. But these are the people that are taking changes.
Socialism scares them to death. I had a friend, I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and she's a dear friend. She would give you anything that she owns, but she's, you know, where she stands. We have these strange discussions. And she was saying to me, well, do you think it's fair that rich people should have to pay for, you know, that people that have money should have to pay for things for people who don't have money? And I just said to her, what are you talking about? I said, I don't think it's fair that somebody who makes $10 million a year pays less taxes than I pay. I said,
exactly.
I think that people should pay their fair share. And if the idea that corporations aren't paying taxes and that people that have huge amounts of wealth are not paying taxes, and not only that, but are getting some crazy tax breaks, they're probably making money off of the taxes. I said, how could you think that? And she really, one of those people that really, you know, is always, you know, it's like Sisyphus, they're always pushing the stone up the hill. You know, they're always struggling. And I sit there and go, how can you support this? I said, you know, socialism and communism are not great, but, you know, they're not perfect. But we practice some of it anyway. We just
exactly
bad name, you know. Everybody's so scared from 50, 100 years ago. They're so afraid of the socialists and the communists. And I mean, let's face it, neither one worked in Russia. But
exactly.
Whatever they say, they're a dictatorship. They're not communists.
Exactly.
They're not socialists.
What's interesting, where communism and fascism start to look like the same thing. They're the same thing, really. It's a dictatorship by, you know, a small core of people who make policy in every way. But what I find fascinating is, you know, the marketing. Socialism has become a dirty word in this country, and it's marketing. It's marketing. I can't remember who the economist was. I don't think it was John Kenneth Galbraith. I'll have to look it up, who said that socialism is never okay in the United States unless it's for the rich. And that was so true. I don't believe in socialism as in funding laziness. And that includes, you know, some woman who decides to have 13 kids by 13 different fathers, and she does it just to get an increasingly large welfare check. No, that's bullshit. You know, it's like, who made her the hatchery for the United States? On the other hand, I live in New York, and I can take you down to Greenwich Village, and there are storefronts there in buildings that have been empty for years. They have not been rented for years because, listen to this, the landlords are asking such exorbitant rents that even mega corporations like Ralph Lauren and Marc Jacobs will no longer rent them. And what do we do? Now listen to this. This is socialism. We give millionaire landlords, billionaire landlords, people who own dozens and dozens of buildings in New York City, in Manhattan, we give them breaks, tax breaks, financial breaks, left and right, if their stores do not rent. Now,
that's been going on.
If you're a cab driver in New York and you're living 50 miles outside the city in a one-bedroom apartment with 12 other people, and you've come to this country to try and pursue a life, and you come all the way into the city, and you drive a cab for 8 hours or maybe 12 hours, right? If you don't drive a cab one day, you don't get paid. You don't have grocery money. You don't have money for the rent. You don't have money for your insurance. Why would we allow someone who owns real estate, if that's their job, to make money on a day they don't make money? If you're not renting a piece of property and you've owned buildings, I guess just go without money. So why should you be paid anything? You've marked up. See, capitalism is great except for capitalists, because capitalists never really want to be in competition. They say they're into it, but they're really not. Because if we were really doing capitalism, what we would do to these rich bitches is say, you didn't rent your store for 5 years. You don't get any money. I don't know. Pay taxes on your land. Pay taxes on your building. Keep up the utilities so the pipes don't freeze. But if you can't rent this place to Ralph Lauren or Marc Jacobs or even the Spinellis who want to open a little pizza parlor, you're out of luck, pal. You don't have money for insurance or for today's groceries because Mr. Spinoza, who's driving a cab in front of your building, didn't work today. He didn't work. So why should he get paid? Capitalism is capitalism. As Joan Crawford said, the knife cuts both ways. And that's one thing that the Republicans and the neo-fascists and the Republican Party and the capitalists don't want. They don't want that knife to cut both ways because it would cut their dicks off. That's what would happen.
Do you remember in the 70s and 80s when there were office buildings that were empty all over the city, to the point at which they were talking about housing the homeless in the office buildings? And I think they may have rented some space and done it for a little bit. And there were these huge buildings that were empty. Are they filled now? I doubt it.
Well, and the other thing is, since I'm traveling all over the United States, as many of you know, I have been traveling to the secondary. I don't mean that as an insult. I've been traveling to the first tier cities, second tier and third tier cities, and second and third tier cities are surrounded by malls that are half empty or completely empty, derelict malls that are absolutely spooky. These were built by mega millionaires, and they were given shocking tax breaks, shocking breaks by villages who they then wiped out. So you had entire villages wiped out because all the businesses, the little mom and pops, couldn't compete with what was in a 40-acre sized mall outside of Toledo or Akron or wherever. And now the great American dream, they're all out of business. I am looking down at Mall of America right now. I'm in a hotel, and I'm looking out of my five-star hotel window down at Mall of America at a massive Sears department store. The Sears sign is still on it, and they've draped a banner over it saying, out of business. And the banner is flapping. The big yellow plastic banner is flapping in the wind. That's the American dream for you. And let me tell you something. The rich people that did that did not suffer. The sales staff in there were dumped on the street. Working people were dumped on the street. And woe to them that voted for a Republican agenda, because that trickle-down theory is the sound. You know, when you believe in trickle down, all you're hearing is Ronald Reagan peeing on your head. That's what's trickling down, pal. The rich are pissing on your head. That's the reality of trickle down. It's bullshit. So, I've said it.
And no, you're right. You're right. And I see it. I live outside of the city now, but when I lived in the city, I saw it then. And I see it now. I mean, there's so many businesses that are closed now or closing.
Oh, well, Greenwich Village is unrecognizable. And of course, typical New York, the Hudson Yards is being portrayed as the dream come true. The dream come true. The Hudson Yards is like a cross between the Jetsons and oh God, I don't even know what. You go there, go to the Hudson Yards and see the skyscrapers that are going up overnight, 60 stories high, everything. But the only businesses in that entire complex, that multi-block complex, are, you know, it's the mega corporations that can afford the rents there. Not only restaurants, but then the stores. It's Neiman Marcus. It's like, who could possibly open a business there? The only people that are going to be able to work there are people that are willing to be waiters and clerks in the big mega stores and big mega corporations, and none of them will be allowed to live there. None of them. Those apartment buildings are for the hyper rich. That's the thing.
Where can they live? They can't live in Brooklyn. They can't live in Manhattan.
No.
We're expecting
them to commute. We want them to commute 2 hours to come in and wipe our asses. That's basically what we're saying to the working class. We want you to live as far away as possible because we don't want to look at you. We don't want to live with you, but we do expect you to come in and wipe my ass. And when I moved to New York, policemen still lived within blocks of the precinct they worked in. Firemen still worked within blocks of this fire station they worked in.
Yeah.
Teachers still worked within blocks of the school.
Had to live in New York City. Teachers had to, by law, live in New York City.
Uh-huh.
New York City
cab drivers lived within walking distance of the place where they picked up their cab and drove. And when they were finished driving, they handed their cab off to a guy, and then they walked home. They walked 4 or 5 blocks to their home. The neighborhoods that were mixed with rich and working class people are gone.
Yeah.
Complete. And Greenwich Village is astounding. Greenwich Village is the most appalling shell of what it used to be. It's nothing compared to what it was. I just saw the time. Darling, I'm so glad you called, and we didn't have any other calls, so it was thrilling to have you call in tonight. Thank you for calling in. And, you know, we turned this show – we try not to do our shows all political. We try to make them a mix. But, you know, as Gwendolyn said earlier tonight, you know, it's hard not to – yeah. How do you look away? How do you look away from any of this? You know, Barr, Mnuchin,
well, too many people
Trump.
Look away, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And, you know human beings, it's a shame that we can't just wipe ourselves out and leave the other, you know, species to take over the earth. And maybe the experiment will go differently next time. I mean, it's a shame that we're wiping out everything with us. We're taking everything with us. More reports on landfill, plastics, you know, appearing in the ocean now. The amount of poisoning of the ocean is astounding. And, you know, but having said that, I want to end the show with the whole idea. It's good to be vocal, and then it's good to do something about what you believe in. So if you're angry, make sure you do something about it. And if you're angry, make sure you tell things that you love, people that you love, people that do a good job. I make a point of thanking every waiter and waitress, and I go to the managers of restaurants when we're traveling, and I say how wonderful the staff was or how wonderful the food was tonight. And the hotels we stay in, I go to the front desk. I tell people, thank you. We've got to all make an effort to tell people when they're doing a good job. We have to be mindful and present and grateful for good things, even as we identify and censure bad things. We've got to also find joy and light in the world around us. We've got to, because otherwise we'll just be dark in the darkness ourselves. So, you know, Mummy says all this stuff, but I also believe that there are wonderful people in the world. There are wonderful people standing right next to us, and they're all shapes and colors and designs. And we have to turn to our brothers and sisters and say, good job. Nice to meet you. My name is, you know, how pleasant to see you. Have a good day. Thank you for holding the door, right? We have to do those things. It's the only way we're going to hold anything together. It's the only way we can banish the dark energy, really. We've got to be able to find joy and love. So I'm glad you called in tonight. Thank you.
Totally agree with you, dear. Thank you. And have a good night.
All right. You have a great week, all right?
You
thank
too.
You. Gwendolyn, I know I said I wouldn't talk politics, but I became a harridan. I became a harpy. If only I had Medusa's power to go and have people look in my face, my enemies look in my face, and turn to stone in horror. Like in abject, I'd love to turn Barr into a statue of stone. You know, oh my God, just whatever.
It's been a heck of it's been this way for too long. But the truth is,
but we joke that every news cycle, we keep joking that every news cycle is 10 times worse than the one before. It's like it's incrementally horrible. There was a time where you could not watch the news. You turn on the news at 9 in the morning, and then you'd go to work, and at 5 o'clock you'd come home and you turn on the news, and there'd be one blow to your head. Now, you walk away from a TV for 10 minutes, dear God, you don't know what's happening. We're sending aircraft to Iran now to make sure they understand we mean business. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
There's a whole fleet going over there. And, you know, I have more of a sneaking suspicion they're backing up Bibi than they're doing anything else over there. And that scares the heck out of me.
Meanwhile, Trump and his pals and whatever his guest du jour are spending, you know, $1,000 a minute down at Mar-a-Lago on lobster and caviar and golf. It's like, oh my God, when rich people did that in France in 1789, they were dragged out of their houses and killed. When the Russians did that in 1918, when the Tsar and his family and his relatives and their friends did that, if they hadn't gotten out of the country, they were dragged out and they were killed. And they were killed with their children. They were killed with their pets. Yeah. It's like the nerve of people going to Mar-a-Lago. Meanwhile, while there are children all around Miami and Fort Lauderdale and everything who are going hungry, why are people not burning that fucking building to the ground?
Directly across from Mar-a-Lago really doesn't belong to them historically, but just across, directly across the canal. From Mar-a-Lago, there is this one little building set between the condos over there, and it's a bright light in Palm West Palm. It's a little it used to be a Catholic outlet for food,
right,
and blankets and things like that. And it still goes on. It's no longer done by the Catholics, but there's still some outreach in that little building and a lot of free books for people to go and get. And that, like you say, you know, you light that little candle against the darkness and soon other candles appear. So it's, oh boy, I'll tell you, I keep hearing B-52 singing Cherry Bomb, I'll tell you.
Well, you know what gets me is this whole concept of gated communities and everything. And people who do this and live in them, I wonder how high the gates, they think the gates will be, or how strong they will be. You know, if the scale tips and you have too many people who are without, if the have-nots become too populous, it's France, 1789. It's Russia, 1918. And I think it's so interesting that Americans still think that this can continue on worse and worse and worse with no consequences. It just, it's like, at what point do you think, I know we had a brush with it back during George Bush's days, because I remember that the rich were not walking up and down the streets of New York with Saks Fifth Avenue bags. Do you remember they did the whole plain brown bag thing, where people who went shopping were no longer carrying, you know, Bendels and Bonwit Teller bags. And, you know, they knew not to walk around with their shopping bags and their, you know, their Louis Vuitton purses out in the open.
That's
something we're going to bring up next week.
During that time.
Well, we'll talk about that next week. I'll make that one of our notes for our podcast. It's 7:58 my time. It's 8:58 your time. We're just about out of time. I want to remind you that our sponsor tonight, as always, is DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Run, do not walk to your laptop. Enter DaughtersOfIsis.com and check out all their amazing products. Mummy uses them all the time. And my third eye is completely open now. I am a much more expanded person thanks to Gwendolyn and her concoctions of just amazing stuff. All right, well, it's time, Gwendolyn. I will look for you next Monday night here on our live podcast.
But
come now, don't sulk. Good night, everybody. Love you all. Have a wonderful week and light one candle. Good night.